Welcome to your weekly Oxstock edition for Tuesday, July 14th, 2026. My name is Avshalom Gissin and I am compiling the edition for this week. News items have been selected and read by Mark Christodoulou and Kristen Dennison. We have a great mix of news and transport service updates, building science projects, heatwave reports, sports and local curio, all the way from primary schools to retirement homes across Oxfordshire. Sunrise times this week range from 5:03 to 5:11 a.m. and sunset times are from 9:18 to 9:10 p.m. And now for the news. Enjoy!
Pavements close to Oxford Railway Station are too narrow for pedestrians, and the issue needs an urgent review, according to a former county councillor. John Howson, a former Liberal Democrat county councillor who lives near the rail station, and has noticed how there is often not enough room on the narrow pavements in Hyde Bridge Street for the large number of pedestrians who use them. The street is one of the most popular routes for visitors arriving at the rail station who walk to the city centre. Mr. Howson said now is a good time to review the matter, as traffic could get worse when the Botley Road reopens. The road is due to reopen at the end of August, following a 3.5-year closure linked to work connected with a multi-million pound upgrade of Oxford Station. Mr. Howson said, should the County Council consider closing Hyde Bridge Street to through traffic, and just use Park End Street as the north-south route through the city, especially now we have the congestion charge and reduced traffic flows. This issue was highlighted during a recent Oxford University Open Day, which brought large numbers of visitors from the railway station heading to Broad Street in the city centre. The pavements in Hyde Bridge Street between the end of the canal and Worcester Street have always been an issue for pedestrians. But the closure of the footpath between Rewley Road and Upper Fisher Row for long-term building works has brought the issue into sharper focus. Mr. Howson added, Hyde Bridge Street could remain a shared space between these two roads for residents and deliveries, and only in use for emergency vehicles between the canal and Worcester Street. All other traffic could be routed via Park End Street. There might need to be additional measures to stop cars queuing for the Westgate car park blocking the Park End Street junction at Frideswyde Square, but that is something, especially at weekends, the County Council should have tackled months ago. As a part of this change, the routing of buses to and from the station forecourt might also be worth reconsidering, as the current arrangement in Frideswyde Square is not conducive to good timekeeping during periods of heavy traffic. The reopening of the Botley Road in September will only make matters worse if nothing is done, as there will be a new influx of vehicles from the west toward the city centre and Westgate. Oxford Pedestrian Association has long identified Hythe Bridge Street as one of the worst congestion points for pedestrians. It said in a statement that the County Council should consider a radical change to improve life for pedestrians heading into the city centre from the station, adding the street should be closed to through motorised traffic to create a safe and pleasant walking and cycling route between the station and city centre. Chairwoman Sushila Dahl said, the pavements on Hythe Bridge Street, especially at the east half of the road, are far too narrow, considering they are the main route between the station and the city centre. Pedestrians frequently spill out into the road.
The County Council's free park-and-ride bus ticket scheme is set to come to an end next month. On August 15th, the free group day pass that comes with paying for parking will be replaced by the new £3 combined ticket covering 16 hours of parking and return bus travel for up to 5 people. The park and ride concession is being paid for by Oxfordshire County Council using its anticipated £5.2 million raised through congestion charge pay passes and fines. It will be replaced at the following park and ride locations: Pear Tree, Oxford Parkway, Thornhill, Redbridge, Secourt. The signage changes required for the new pricing were approved by the City Council on July 8th. When the plan was approved by the County Council, Transport Boss Gareth Epps said, "The measures we have agreed to fund today go some way towards tackling some of the persistent traffic problems we've seen and also help to spread the benefits of the scheme as widely as possible, ensuring workers in our schools and hospitals too see the benefits. Other plans for congestion charge cash spending could be on free or discounted bus passes for hospital workers and teachers." A County Council report on the Park and Ride discount plan said that county or citywide fare reductions were not feasible due to the very high costs. It suggested a countywide £2 fare cap could cost £9 million per year and a £2.5 cap £5.75 million. The cost of a £1 single fare cap within the Oxford Smart Zone was estimated as £15.5 million per year. City bus users will pay three times more than park-and-ride customers for equivalent tickets, as congestion charge cash is used to discount journeys for those traveling into Oxford, but not inside it. The County Council's free park-and-ride bus ticket scheme is set to come to an end on August 15th and will be replaced by a £3 combined ticket covering 16 hours of parking and return bus travel for up to five people. An equivalent group ticket for the bus users in the city without the inclusion of parking costs £9. This means if an Oxford resident were to choose to drive from their home to a park and ride on the Ring Road rather than walk to a city bus stop, they could save £6 on tickets per day for a family of five. The park and ride concession is being paid for by Oxfordshire County Council using its anticipated £5.2 million raised through congestion charge pay passes and fines. It will be in place at the following park and rides: Pear Tree, Oxford Parkway, Thornhill, Redbridge, Secourt. At a City Council Cabinet meeting, Deputy Leader Anna Railton Labour emphasized that the Council will continue to press for similar levels of discount for bus passengers in the city, as prices contrast unfavorably. The meeting saw the approval of changes to enable the park and ride discount already passed by the County Council, but a report states this is not an endorsement of the wider policy framework on bus fares. It comes as a report from campaign group Citizens Oxford revealed children are skipping lunch to afford bus travel. When the County Council approved plans for congestion charge spending on park and rides, there was cross-party concern that it was inequitable. County and City Councillor Saj Maik, Real Independence Group, said, "The free park and ride is a great initiative, but no business in my division, Cowley, benefit, as we don't have a park and ride servicing Cowley Road." County Green Group Leader and Charwell Councillor Ian Middleton said he would have liked to have seen cheaper bus travel for everyone rather than just selected groups. He added, "Focusing mainly on park and ride charges, which will only advantage car drivers, which simply shifts the congestion problem to the outskirts." County Councillor Liz Brighouse, Labour, said the congestion charge means people she represents have been stopped from accessing shops, doctors, and pharmacies without reliable public transport. She added, "Any money generated should go to alleviate the impact of the congestion charge on those being most seriously affected within their own communities." At that time, a County Council spokesperson said, "As a direct result of the congestion charge, new and improved bus services have been introduced in the city, with bus patronage increasing by 8% on go-ahead services since the start of the congestion charge. They called park and rides an essential part of Oxford's transport system since 1973. On the potential for county or citywide fare reductions, they cited a cabinet report saying they are not feasible due to the very high cost. The report suggested a countywide £2 fare cap could cost £9 million a year and a £2.50 cap £5.75 million. The cost of a single £1 fare cap in the Oxford Smart Zone was estimated at £15.5 million a year.
The removal of parking spaces in an Abingdon street has led to vehicles crashing, according to campaigners. In March, residents complained after parking spaces outside their homes were removed to create more room for buses. A total of 12 households in Radley Road complained to Oxfordshire County Council, accusing it of approving parking restrictions based on anecdotal information rather than actual evidence. The residents live opposite Our Lady and St. Edmund Catholic Church. They said freedom of information requests revealed that no traffic counts, parking surveys, speed data, or CCTV evidence were gathered before the council approved single yellow lines that banned parking for 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, Monday to Saturday, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Jonathan Gaither, a health centre practice manager who lives in one of the affected homes, said at the time he would now be forced to park his car on the narrow forecourt in front of his house. Some homes, however, do not have enough space for a parked vehicle. Now, David Cole has launched a change.org online petition calling for people to sign it and stop Oxfordshire County Council from causing traffic chaos to your stretch of Radley Road. The petition says, "You may have noticed an increase in parked cars and traffic issues down Radley Road recently, especially during school drop-off. This has been caused by parking restriction imposed by the council on Radley Road opposite Our Lady's School. The council claim that this 80-metre stretch of road was causing a 21% delay in bus journey times. The council has since admitted that this evidence is incorrect, as confirmed by the bus company. However, they have still pushed ahead with the restrictions. This action, that has no positive impacts, has caused traffic chaos further down Radley Road, posing a safety risk to school children and other pedestrians. It has also caused inconvenience and safety issues for local traffic. There have already been two crashes on Radley Road opposite Our Lady's, as cars now speed down that stretch without the traffic calming influence of parked cars." The online petition currently has 106 signatures and is aiming for a total of 1,000. In March, the council said the proposals for Radley Road aim to improve bus journey times and facilitate cycle improvements as part of the council's cycling and walking infrastructure plan. The decision to approve the proposals followed a full public consultation exercise where feedback was considered as part of the decision-making process. The council is aware of further complaints about the decision, and officers are currently in the process of investigating before responding directly. A county council spokesman added, "We look forward to receiving the petition in the future, and officers will respond to the petition in due course." A crematorium is reopening following a major refurbishment. North Oxfordshire Crematorium and Memorial Park in Tackley, owned by Memoria, has held an official relaunch to mark the unveiling of extensive upgrades designed to improve the experience for bereaved families and improve the site's environmental footprint. The crematorium, which is close to Woodstock, serves communities across Kidlington, Bicester, Whitney and North Oxford. Improvements include a complete reline of the crematorium and decoration and improvements to the chapel, with new microphones installed.
Plans have been revealed for a 149 student room block in the heart of Oxford's Summertown and the demolition of a long-standing row of shops. A proposal to redevelop Suffolk House, a block of shops and restaurants on the corner of Banbury Road and South Parade in Summertown, has been submitted to Oxford City Council. It suggests knocking down the site of the former Hartwell's Garage, which was built in the 1930s and converted into shops and offices in the 1970s, and replacing it with student accommodation and commercial retail spaces on the ground floor, totaling 1,180 square meters of shop floors. The new building would replace the collection of one- and two-story buildings, which houses a range of smaller retail units at ground floor, with poor quality, partly vacant, offices above, with a new five-story block. Shops which would be demolished in the development include local supermarkets, restaurants, and takeaways, education,
hairdressing, and stationery shops, plus office and studio spaces above. Suffolk House currently hosts 7 occupied units, whereas the new proposed building would house only 4, all of them facing onto Banbury Road. However, the application states that the current shops are constrained by the quality of the building, making the spaces dated and enclosed through things like low ceilings. In contrast, the plans claim the new use Class E premises in the redeveloped Suffolk House would be designed flexibly to meet the needs of existing retailers, independent businesses, and national brands. On behalf of the applicant, TSH Architects said, "The new mixed-use building will make a positive contribution to the surrounding streetscape, creating a more attractive and welcoming environment. Flexible ground-floor retail units will provide modern shop spaces with active frontages that support the vitality of Summertown District Center, while new residents above will increase footfall throughout the day and evening." The applicant is commercial company BPS2 Varsity 5 Limited, which was incorporated in Jersey in 2023 and registered in the UK last year. Oxford City Council was involved in a pre-application process, and the company hosted an informal consultation at Summertown Community Arts Center in March this year. Only one comment has been submitted on the planning portal application since it was submitted last week, with a neighbor voicing concerns. These include that the building proposed is too big for the site, poses a potential loss of valuable services for locals.
The demolition of an Oxford leisure complex for a redevelopment including labs, a substation, and refurbished Grade 2 listed pub is set to be approved next week. Planning officers have recommended Oxford City Council approve the major Ozone Leisure Park project on Tuesday, July 14th, despite objection and concerns shared by the Environment Agency and Thames Valley Police. Faroka Group, Pioneer Group, and Bidwell's proposals for the site by the Kassam Stadium have been subject to years of planning battle. In 2023, plans to demolish the existing View Cinema and Hollywood Bowl for labs were met with petitions collecting thousands of signatures. New proposals were resubmitted in July last year. Revisions have been continuously made, and recent updates have included explanations of when different parts of the development would be built, starting with a new cinema. And in June 2026, it was confirmed that a derelict pub, the Priory, will be revamped. It had suddenly closed in 2013. The plan said, "The vibrant southern community hub is anchored by the historic Minchery Farmhouse, which will be restored as a public house with medicinal gardens reflecting the site's heritage. Based in the 600-year-old farmhouse built as part of Littlemore Priory in the 15th century, it was also previously a country club and started operations as a pub from around the 1960s. Developers said the Ozone facilities in their current form are no longer sustainable and must evolve to ensure a vibrant future, securing jobs, attracting investment, and delivering a place for local communities to enjoy. Proposals state that the current tenants' leases are coming to an end. A new 4-screen cinema with up to 510 seats is included, with potential for an outdoor cinema and food market in the wider site. There will also still be an arcade and bowling alley, along with the electrical substation and a transport hub to support future connectivity to the proposed Cowley station." A city council report states, "The proposal would generate additional employment and a boost to the local economy. The plans say the development could support at least 1,700 jobs." The planning officer concludes with a recommendation to grant planning permission for the development proposed, subject to addressing any comments made by the Environment Agency, with several conditions in response to concerns about habitat destruction and police fears about a lack of information on crime mitigation. Their report states legal agreements would see £4.225 million in funding handed over by developers for future parking, transport, roadworks, and bus services, with over £8 million required as a levy to support infrastructure around the new development.
Oxfordshire County Council has been named a finalist in a national scheme to pilot digital planning tools. The council was chosen as part of Round 6 of the PropTech Innovation Fund, a national programme to modernise the planning system through technology. The council is part of one of 11 consortiums selected across the UK to share £2.4 million of funding to test and develop digital solutions for planning services. Laura Gordon, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Environment and Economy, said, "We are delighted to be selected as a finalist in the PropTech Innovation Fund. This pilot provides an important opportunity to work with partners to harness digital innovation, improve how planning data is used, and support more effective delivery of new homes and infrastructure. The 8-month pilot will focus on improving the use of data across the planning process, particularly to address barriers to housing delivery. This includes better evidence gathering, improved data flows, and greater coordination across different parts of the planning system. Work will be delivered through collaboration with industry partners and other local authorities, aiming to test new tools in a real-world setting." Ms. Gordon said, "Oxfordshire is working with national partners to test digital tools that can improve planning efficiency and support housing delivery, ensuring the county remains at the forefront of innovation." A new road maintenance vehicle is helping to drive down emissions. The 3.5-ton highways truck, now in use by Oxfordshire County Council, is a dual-fuel vehicle running on both hydrogen and hydro-treated vegetable oil, HVO. It has been retrofitted by hydrogen technology company Ulemco and is part of the Council's efforts to explore cleaner transport solutions as part of Oxfordshire County Council's plan to reach net zero by 2030. Liz Leffman, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways Construction and Repair, said, "The climate emergency is the biggest challenge the planet faces, and we are committed to not only reaching our own net zero target as a council by 2030, but to enabling Oxfordshire to be carbon neutral well ahead of 2050. We are delighted to be working with M Group to trial this innovative technology, which will mean lower emissions and cleaner air across Oxfordshire. The vehicle is part of a trial in partnership with M Group, the council's principal highways contractor. A second, medium or larger HGV is due to join the fleet in early 2027. Both HVO and hydrogen are estimated to reduce tailpipe carbon emissions by 30 to 40% compared to diesel, while also cutting nitrogen oxide and other air pollutants. The dual-fuel trucks will transport workers and materials for repairs and improvements across the road network. Researchers at the University of Oxford have discovered two rare super-puff planets, which are roughly the same size as Jupiter, but less dense than candy floss. The planets TOI-791b and TOI-791c orbit an F7-type dwarf star around 1,110 light-years from Earth in the southern constellation Volans. Although both worlds are similar in size to Jupiter, which has a density of about 1.33 grams per cubic centimetre, their densities are lower than candy floss, at roughly 0.05 grams per cubic centimetre. That makes them among the lowest density giant planets ever found, and part of a rare class of superpuff worlds, named because of their light densities, of which fewer than 40 are currently known. As only four other planetary systems host more than one superpuff, TOI-791 offers an unusually rich laboratory for testing ideas about how planetary systems form and evolve. The sibling planets are thought to have formed together from the same disk of gas and dust surrounding their young star. Oxfordshire has been leading the UK's aid response to the devastating earthquake in Venezuela. Specialist British search and rescue teams have been deployed to the South American country. Some 68 personnel and equipment were flown out from RAF Bryce Norton aboard a Royal Air Force Voyager aircraft as part of a wider UK government response to support those affected by a recent crisis. The RAF said aircrew and logisticians worked rapidly to prepare freight and passengers, including specialist drones and 6 search dogs. The mission underscores the RAF's global mobility capabilities. Wing Commander Prager, Officer Commanding 101 Squadron, said the Royal Air Force's ability to rapidly deploy people, equipment and humanitarian aid worldwide is central to the UK's response to international crises such as the Venezuelan earthquake. This deployment demonstrates the professionalism of our personnel and underscores the vital role of strategic air mobility in delivering timely, life-saving support to those most affected. RAF personnel worked alongside government and partner agencies to prepare the aircraft and facilitate the specialist team's departure. The deployment highlights the importance of RAF Bryce Norton in enabling urgent international responses. Meanwhile, Oxford-based Oxfam has also launched an appeal for money to help aid efforts. Humanitarian lead Magnus Corfixen said Oxford is prioritising getting an overview of the situation with its partners on the ground. He told the BBC, "There will be a massive trauma from this, both physically as well as mentally, and that's where we're also looking at services around psychological first aid, psychosocial support, and trying to support communities." A spokesman said, "Oxfam is currently coordinating with local partner organisations to assess needs and develop a response plan following this sudden onset emergency. Initial assessments are underway through partner organisations to determine the scale of damage and identify priority needs. Immediate, life-saving assistance is critical to address urgent needs and prevent further harm, including emergency healthcare, temporary shelter, protection, restoration of essential services, access to food, safe water, and basic hygiene conditions." Surging temperatures have led to a major increase in demand for essential resources. Thames Water has reported a sharp rise in water use across its network, with household consumption up by an average of 30% as temperatures surpassed 30 degrees centigrade. In London, daily demand exceeded 2.2 billion litres from Wednesday to Friday, while the Thames Valley and home counties recorded more than 750 million litres per day over the same period. Andrew Tucker, Water Demand Reduction Manager at Thames Water, said, "We saw a significant rise in demand across our region last week, particularly for outdoor water use. Demand increased so sharply in some areas that people were using water faster than we could produce and move it through our network. We'd like to thank customers who played their part by reducing usage during this extreme weather, helping to keep supplies flowing while staying hydrated and safe." The company highlighted exceptionally high demand in Slough, Oxford, Swindon, Aylesbury and Wickham, prompting calls for customers to use water only for essential purposes until demand eased. Mr. Tucker said, "All our water is drinking quality and comes from local sources, so small changes such as using a watering can, reusing water and delaying non-essential outdoor jobs can reduce what we need to take from the environment. We are asking customers to avoid using hose pipes and sprinklers on lawns and gardens so that supplies can be maintained for everyone during periods of exceptionally high demand. The hot, dry weather also increased the risk of leaks as shifting ground conditions put additional strain on pipes. Thames Water crews worked around the clock to keep water flowing, repairing hundreds of leaks each week and closely monitoring the network to maintain supply. Mr. Tucker said, "Our teams are working around the clock to keep water moving, fix leaks, and maintain supplies. We're also delivering our biggest infrastructure upgrade in 150 years and rolling out smart meters to help customers spot leaks and manage their water use. Smart meters have already helped the company identify more than 135,000 leaks on customer properties. A recent survey commissioned by Thames Water found that nearly 1 in 10 people use a lawn sprinkler during the summer months, despite each sprinkler using up to 166 litres of water every 10 minutes. The company is urging customers to take simple steps to reduce usage during future heatwaves, such as delaying garden watering until evening, reusing paddling pool water for plants, and using watering cans instead of hoses. Thames Water serves around 16 million customers and supplies 2.7 billion litres of drinking water each day across London and the Thames Valley.
An Oxford hospital has been slammed over its aircon shortage amid a 33 degrees centigrade heat wave. With hot temperatures again hitting the UK, Oxford University Hospitals, which runs the John Radcliffe Hospital, has admitted its operating theaters do not have air conditioning, though they are ventilated. Following this, the British Medical Association, BMA, the trade union for doctors, has called NHS buildings poorly ventilated, cramped, and lacking effective temperature control. BMA representative body chair Dr. Amit Koshar said, "The NHS estate, including hospitals and GP practices, is in many cases outdated and in desperate need of modernizing. It's estimated that in general practice alone, 20% of surgery buildings predate the foundation of the NHS itself. The NHS buildings are often poorly ventilated, cramped, and without air conditioning or effective temperature control. In extreme temperatures like we're experiencing this week, or at the other end of the spectrum in the depths of winter, this can cause real problems for both staff trying to work comfortably and safely, and for patients being treated or waiting to be seen, in some cases for health conditions related to the temperature itself." While making clear that the operating theaters are ventilated, Oxford University Hospital said that procedures can go ahead, but that patient safety is paramount. On Thursday, July 8th, temperatures in Oxford were set to hit 33 degrees centigrade, while records were set in the wider county and across the UK in May and in June. A spokesperson for the hospitals group said they were prepared for this latest heat wave. They said, "We are prepared for the upcoming hot weather and have business continuity plans in place to ensure any disruption is kept to a minimum. We have also had debriefs following recent episodes of hot weather to find out how we can work as well as possible to ensure the impact of the hot weather is managed appropriately. We ask that people take care during hot weather to help us keep our emergency departments for emergencies." Considering this, Dr. Koshar said that more investment is needed to ensure hospitals such as the John Radcliffe are fit for purpose. He said, "While we're clear, more must be done to address the climate change health emergency at a global and national level, we've persistently made the case for more capital investment to bring the NHS estate up to date so that staff can work safely and efficiently to treat patients all year round, adapting to the sadly more frequent extreme weather we're seeing today." A surge in defibrillator usage during the recent heat wave has prompted fresh calls for action. South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, is urging defibrillator guardians to ensure their devices are ready for use after a reported 118% increase in the number of times members of the public were directed to collect a defibrillator during emergencies. The spike was recorded during a heat wave in late June and comes as the region faces its third heat wave of the summer, with temperatures reaching the mid-30s. David Hammer, Divisional Community Engagement Manager for Thames Valley at SCAS, said, "This surge of defibrillator deployment during the last heat wave shows how vital the work of defibrillator guardians is. So please, please help us and check your defib today if you have not done it for a while. if any guardians of defibrillators are unsure what to do or how to replace old pads or batteries, then get in touch with our team via defib@scas.nhs.uk and we'll point you in the right direction.
Oxfordshire leaders have written to the man tipped to be our next Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, to give the Thames Valley its own mayor. In a joint letter addressed to Andy, Oxfordshire County Council's leader and its cabinet member for HR and reorganisation asked the former Manchester mayor for an ambitious devolution settlement after they vetoed a £97 billion region plan. It comes as an Oxford City Council report states the County Council's action considerably reduces the likelihood of establishing a Thames Valley mayor in the near term. Proposals for a devolved Foundation Strategic Authority, FSA, which, under government guidelines, paves the way for a mayoralty, were thrown out by Lib Dem council leaders, Oxfordshire's Tim Bearder and Windsor and Maidenhead's Simon Werner, after 18 months of negotiation involving 13 councils. The move has been criticised by the region's Labour and Conservative council leaders, and Lib Dem district council bosses in Charwell and West Oxfordshire say they are still in favour of an FSA. The devolved power would have covered Oxfordshire, Berkshire and Swindon in a move with potential to create £97 billion in gross value added, according to a government minister. Mr. Bearder explained the rejection was due to concerns about a lack of powers, funding and coherent geography needed to make a meaningful difference. The jurisdiction given to an authority of this kind includes powers over transport, infrastructure and housing coordination, as well as increased access to funding, all previously held by central government. Mr. Bearder is against the inclusion of Swindon, which is not covered by the same police force or healthcare coordination board as Oxfordshire and Berkshire. In a council meeting, he said he wants to see Buckinghamshire brought in instead. The county had pulled out of plans in February this year. In his letter to the new Makerfield MP, Mr. Bearder does not mention Bucks, but looks north, saying the area he is particularly excited for Oxfordshire to work with is the Liverpool City region. The letter follows a heated debate on the topic at the County Council on June 30th. Where a policy specialist from Business West had appealed for the proposal, saying the regional business community are concerned and fears an opportunity cost for delays. Opposition councillor Kieran Mallon, Conservative, said the situation was like putting the ball on the penalty spot and missing by a mile. The City Council Cabinet is set to reaffirm its support for devolution, including Swindon, at its meeting next week. It had previously spent over £20,000 working on the vetoed proposal. Its leader, Susan Brown, Labour, suggested the County Council's withdrawal was on a whim. While the City Council report says the veto decision introduces delay, uncertainty and strategic risk, it does not prevent future progress.
Rising inflation and ongoing funding cuts could force Oxfordshire County Council to make even deeper budget savings in the coming years. The warning comes on top of existing plans to cut at least £15.5 million in 2027-28, rising to £22 million in 2028-29. These savings are required to address reductions in government funding announced earlier this year. A balanced budget has been set for 2026-27. But further cuts may be needed if inflation or increasing demand for services drives up costs beyond current projections. Councillor Dan Levy, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Finance, Property and Transformation, said the government has already cut Oxfordshire's grants. However, like any responsible organization, we forward plan and anticipate risks which may emerge. There are a number of these which could exacerbate an already difficult situation that is not of our making locally. He stressed that the council has a consistent history of careful financial planning. He said, "The county council has a long track record of responsible financial management. We have consistently set aside contingency budgets to deal with uncertainty about demand and other risks. We know there are risks in the wider economy. Everybody knows from their own household budgets or from running a business that inflation remains a persistent problem in the economy." He also said that when prices keep rising, this also increases the cost of the council's services, adding, "As we look towards setting our budget for 2026-28, we are already carefully planning and looking at options to reduce expenditure and make savings. We must balance budgets for services that the council is responsible for to the funding that we expect to be available. People will hear more detail about this in autumn and winter. We will protect frontline services as far as we can." Councillor Levy also raised concerns about the fairness of recent funding changes. He said, "We recognize that there are areas of the country with higher levels of deprivation than our own, and it is right that the people in those places receive the support that they need. However, it is disappointing that councils like Oxfordshire will see real terms reductions in grant funding as a result, and it leaves us more exposed when extra pressures arise. Among the risks identified are rising demand and costs in children's social care, ongoing inflation, and potential changes to national funding schemes. The report warns that changes to the Better Care Fund and the introduction of a fair pay agreement in adult social care may also lead to higher costs." Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet will discuss the financial update on Tuesday, July 14th.
A catastrophic reduction in footfall has been seen at an Oxford museum since it started charging for entry, a campaign group claims. Save Our Museum has analyzed the visitor numbers at the Museum of Oxford, obtained by a Freedom of Information request. As it pushes back against the £4 entry fee, it found footfall was down 70-80% compared to 2024-25. The ticket charge has been in place at the St. Aldate's Museum since late January. This was the first time a fee had been introduced in the institution's history. A spokesperson for the campaign said, "We are incredibly concerned that these figures are so low. It can't just be a matter of give it a year to bed in and hope that it improves. Action needs to be taken now. A mistake was made in introducing charging, and it needs to be rectified as soon as possible." The council said it decided to bring it in due to a reduction in visitors and that it was no longer financially viable to keep subsidizing it. The campaign group says this clearly isn't going to work, as the income raised so far is 61% lower than the council's projections, over £53,000 less. A spokesperson noted, "We also have to assume that donations will be down as people are less likely to donate if they've already paid an entrance fee, so that is an additional potential loss of up to £12,000 based on 2024-25 figures." They said the free day that is still allocated every month sees a significant number of visitors, 13-23% of each month's total, adding it shows that people still want to come to the museum as long as they don't have to pay. They added, "Remove those free days and the footfall figures are even more dire." The group acknowledges that the data it received is from February until the third week of May. It says visitor numbers are likely to be higher over the summer, but maintains its concern. A spokesperson for Oxford City Council said all museum figures are being monitored closely. "These are early days for the new scheme, and we are continuing to compile meaningful data. Following the results of the summer season, a new business plan for MOX will be considered by the Cabinet in the autumn." The fee was approved in October 2025. By March 2026, a petition against the move had been signed by around 2,000 Oxford residents and was debated in the council. Protesters attended, holding up placards outside Oxford Town Hall, sporting messages such as "Knowledge is priceless" and "Free MOX."
A teenager who was treated at Oxford's John Radcliffe Hospital died from cancer after being misdiagnosed with a urine infection. Chloe Venton from Swindon died aged 17 after a two-year battle with Ewing sarcoma, a rare and aggressive type of bone cancer. Her mother, Joanne Venton, said, "It breaks my heart to think Chloe may still be here if they hadn't misdiagnosed her at first and then missed the leukemia." Chloe first began experiencing severe pain night sweats, and frequent trips to the toilet at age 15. Doctors initially diagnosed her with a urinary tract infection, UTI, but when antibiotics failed to work, her mother refused to leave the GP surgery until further tests were carried out. A scan at Great Western Hospital revealed a tumour on her spine. She was referred to the John Radcliffe for more tests, including blood work, MRIs, and CT scans. Miss Venton said, "We were pushed to different teams because no one knew what was going on. I was about to discharge her, but a consultant took me and my husband to the side and said they were so concerned and to keep her in hospital. I'll never forget the next morning. Gary and I were taken to a small, cold, white room and told she had cancer. It was a whirlwind from there." Chloe was quickly diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma and began chemotherapy within hours. After 10 cycles of chemotherapy, proton therapy, and 5 additional rounds of treatment, Chloe became unwell again. She developed a rash, which doctors initially dismissed as a side effect of treatment. Her mother insisted that something was seriously wrong. Ms. Venton said, "Again, I had to fight the doctors that something wasn't right. That rash turned out to be leukemia cutis, leukemia of the skin, and she was also diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, a blood cancer that starts in the bone marrow." Chloe died in July 2020. Due to COVID-19 restrictions at the time, the family were forced to hold a socially distanced funeral. Miss Venton said, "It was a complete nightmare and something we will always hate the government for. They had parties while we couldn't spend our final days together as a family. We weren't allowed funeral cars, so I had to drive myself behind my own daughter's coffin. It was horrific." Chloe's family hope that by sharing her story, they can raise awareness of rare cancers in children and prevent similar tragedies. Miss Venton said, "Chloe's laugh was infectious. Her smile was amazing. She had the biggest heart, and she wouldn't complain or cry to anyone except me."
People can now access mental health support by text message. Chat Health, a confidential messaging service, has launched across Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire for anyone in need of mental health support. Offered by Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust, it provides round-the-clock support via text for issues such as low mood, loneliness, relationship difficulties, panic attacks, anxiety, stress, self-harm, and suicidal thoughts. Dr. Rob Bale, Chief Operating Officer for Mental Health and Learning Disability at Oxford Health, said, "Chat Health provides a vital safety net for people when they need support most. Through Chat Health, we aim to help individuals who reach out to de-escalate distress, develop safety plans, and feel safer than they did when they sent their first text. Users can start a conversation by texting 07312-263-127 and receive an immediate confirmation. Oxford Health aims to reply within 1 hour. The service is available every day, including weekends and bank holidays." Dr. Bale said, "It is a different offer to existing services. It's a dedicated crisis text service that makes support more immediate and accessible. Where needed, people can also be referred on for face-to-face support. The text-based system offers an alternative for those who may find it difficult to speak on the phone or attend appointments in person. Standard network charges apply for messages sent to the service."
Oxfordshire's food businesses have scored strongly in the latest roundup of hygiene ratings, with every district beating the national average. The Food Standards Agency's scale runs from 0 to 5, with 5 the top very good rating, and 0 meaning urgent improvement necessary. Across Oxfordshire's 5,660 inspected premises, 4,676 currently hold a 5, equivalent to 82.6%. the county is one of the strongest in the country, with more than 8 in 10 premises holding the top 5-star rating. Only 92 premises in the county are rated at 2 or below, and overall Oxfordshire sits comfortably above the national average of 78%. West Oxfordshire emerges as the star performer, with more than 9 in 10 businesses rated 5. Of 1,008 premises, 950 have the maximum 5 rating, giving the district a remarkable 94.2% at the top of the scale, and just 3 sites rated 2 or below. Oxford City also performs strongly, with 1,193 out of 1,367 premises rated very good, or 87.3%.
Young City rowers have triumphed at an international royal sporting event. Headington School Boat Club delivered a remarkable performance at Henley Royal Regatta, successfully defending the Prince Philip Challenge Trophy. In addition, the club qualified more boat crews for the international competition than ever before, with more girls' teams than any other school or club this year. This marks another highlight in what has already been a standout season for the club. Ryan Demain, head rowing coach, said, "This achievement speaks volumes about the depth of the program. While trophies naturally attract the headlines, qualifying multiple crews at Henley Royal Regatta demonstrates something equally important, a commitment to developing the entire senior squad. Every athlete is challenged to pursue excellence, creating an environment where standards continue to rise across the whole program rather than within a single crew." Both Headington's first and second quadruple girls' sculls progressed through qualifications into the main event. Competition began on Tuesday, June 30th, with the first quad securing a decisive win over local rivals Shiplake College. The second quad did not advance, and later in the week, the premier team would be knocked out against Marlow Rowing Club. On Wednesday, the first 8 defeated Henley Rowing Club by 4 lengths in a record-breaking display, which was followed by a win against Deerfield Academy USA on Friday. They then secured a place in the semifinals with a 2 3/4 length victory. In the semifinal, Headington faced off against Row America Rye, who have been undefeated since 2024, but were beaten by the Headington team by 2 lengths. This set the stage for Sunday's final against Shiplake College. In the final, Headington's first 8 raced with composure and determination against Shiplake College to retain the Prince Philip Challenge Trophy. In the process, they set a new course record, lowering the previous best time by approximately 4 seconds. Mr. Demain said, "Henley Royal Regatta represents the pinnacle of the rowing season. Success is measured not only by medals and trophies, but by the ability to perform under immense pressure on the sport's biggest stage. Throughout the week, our rowers have done what they do best. They have had fun, looked after each other, and made boats go fast by rowing superbly." The club, which runs a comprehensive development program throughout the school, said that many athletes have progressed through the ranks over several years. Mr. Demain said, "This season will rightly be remembered as one of the most successful in the club's history. Congratulations to every athlete, coach, parent, and supporter who played a part in another unforgettable Henley campaign."
A fun-filled sports day has raised more than £1,000 for charity. Retirees at Churchill Living Apartments in Bicester collected £1,440 for Alzheimer's UK through the event, which took place at Linden Lodge on Linden Road on Friday, June the 26th. 27 residents took part in traditional sports day activities, including the egg and spoon race, pass the ball down the line, hula hoop beanbag toss, tin can alley, and a quiz. Carla Rogers, lodge manager at Linden Lodge, said, "We had a wonderful time at our charity sports day. The teams put everything into it and a lot of fun was had by all. We selected Alzheimer's UK as our chosen charity as it means a lot to residents. Everyone gave extremely generously and we are very grateful to the Churchill Foundation for supporting us and doubling the amount we can donate to such an excellent cause. The Churchill Foundation also provided an afternoon tea and match funding. Ms. Rogers said, "It's a great example of the community spirit on offer here at Linden Lodge, and I'd like to say a big thank you to everyone who took part."
Oxford United has issued a statement after a legal challenge of the club's new stadium plans was refused. Friends of Stratfield Brake, FOSB, is seeking to block the club's proposed 16,000-seat ground on greenbelt land at the Triangle site next to Oxford Parkway. The development, which would include a hotel, restaurant, gym, and other facilities alongside the main stand, has been billed by the club as a once-in-a-generation project that would reshape its home in Oxfordshire. The U's had signed the Section 106 planning agreement with Oxfordshire County Council and Charwell District Council for their new stadium in February. FOSB, represented by law firm Lee Day, launched judicial review proceedings in the High Court, claiming the council's decision was unlawful and raising concerns about the impact on nearby woodland, wildlife, and local roads. A High Court judge has now refused the group's initial application for permission to bring a full judicial review, turning down the challenge on the papers, but the campaigners have declared that they will fight on. However, the campaigners say such refusals are common at this early stage and insist the setback does not change their determination to continue the fight. In a statement responding to the refusal, United detailed the reasons given. Having reviewed the papers submitted, the judge's order concluded that the claimants' grounds of challenge were not reasonably arguable. Specifically, the arguments related to the woodland adjacent to the proposed site were deemed unsustainable, whilst the ground concerning matchday traffic measures provided no valid basis for judicial review. The claimant, Friends of Stratfield Brake, has now served a renewal notice, asking the court to reconsider its refusal and to list the case at an oral renewal hearing. A date for this has not yet been scheduled, although the court's target is for oral renewal hearings to be heard within 1 month from the receipt of a renewal notice. Oxford United continues to work closely with Charwell District Council to ensure the court fully understands the strength of the planning decision and why a substantive judicial review hearing is unnecessary. The club remains confident that the claim will ultimately be dismissed. Oxford United argues the new stadium is essential to securing its long-term future once its lease at the Kassam Stadium expires in 2028, warning that the club's position could be at risk if the Triangle plan does not go ahead. In a legal update, FOSB said it would press ahead with the next step by seeking an oral permission hearing where a barrister will argue in person why the case should be allowed to go forward. Oxford United say they will be in a strong position ahead of the January transfer window after confirming their transfer embargo. The club confirmed that they had been handed a transfer embargo, which restricts the registering of new players, by the EFL after admitting they are not compliant with EFL Salary Cost Management Protocol, SCMP, regulations. The embargo comes 2 weeks after the appointment of former Arsenal and Premier League star Aaron Ramsey as their new head coach, replacing Matt Bloomfield, who was sacked 3 days prior. The U's squad had returned to Oxford last week as preseason got underway, with the Yellows' only new signing, centre-back Frankie Kent, formerly of Heart of Midlothian in Scotland, joining up with his new teammates. In a new statement issued by the club, United revealed that no signings would be made until the January transfer window as shareholders increase investment over the coming months. SCMP, the EFL's financial control framework, specific to League One and League Two clubs, sets limits on the proportion of a club's turnover and owner funding that can be spent on player-related costs, the statement read. Following relegation from the championship, and with rule changes removing the staggered approach to equity injections, the club have been working to align their financial position with the reporting requirements of League One. With a commitment from shareholders to increase investment into Oxford United over the coming months, along with measures to reduce overall costs, the club will be compliant and in a strong position ahead of the January transfer window. The club will have an extremely competitive squad already in place, and the focus this summer will be on retaining those players that give Aaron Ramsey and his staff the strongest group possible to deliver success on the pitch this season. There is now extra pressure on the club to retain the players they do currently have contracted. The U's had been linked to a number of other names already this summer transfer window, many of whom are free agents, such as Oxford-born former Cheltenham Town winger Jordan Thomas and ex-Peterborough United star Archie Collins. However, free agents will not be allowed to sign, with the restriction being on registering players altogether. Supporters Trust Oxfox issued a statement prior to the U's, saying that the news is worrying and unsettling at a time when the new manager needs to be focused solely on recruitment and preseason. Ramsey's Yellows head to Spain on Sunday for a warm-weather training camp before four preseason friendlies, with competitive action beginning on August 8th in the Carabao Cup. Pubs experienced a surge in business following England's dramatic World Cup victory over Mexico. Green King saw more than 5,300 sports bookings, covering 22,000 covers for the early morning England-Mexico match on Sunday night, July 5th. The chain saw pubs like Jude the Obscure on Walton Street in Oxford and the Wigan Pen on George Street in Oxford open late for the game. This number was higher than for the England-Ghana fixture in the same tournament and marks a significant increase compared to the Euro 2024 games. Jody Tate, Green King's chief operating officer, said, "What an epic game! We loved hosting so many fans who chose to watch the England versus Mexico match in our pubs in the early hours of Monday morning." Pubs reported a 67% increase in sales, according to figures from Heineken UK. This was particularly evident in food sales, which rose by 81%, cider by 127%, and lager by 76%. About two-thirds of the 2,400 pubs managed by Heineken UK stayed open for the Round of 16 clash, which began at 2 a.m. GMT after a delay due to severe weather. The busiest trading period was at the 2 a.m. kickoff, with a 4,782% year-on-year increase in total sales. Lawson Mount-Stevens, managing director of Heineken UK's Star Pub, said, "This is a brilliant reminder of why pubs matter. Even with a 2 a.m. kickoff, fans still turned out to watch the match together, creating an atmosphere you simply cannot recreate at home." The extended licensing hours granted for the match resulted in an 11% boost in spending, according to UK Hospitality. Kate Nichols, chairwoman of UK Hospitality, said, "Thanks to the urgent extension to licensing hours, a third of pubs chose to open their doors, and the sector enjoyed an 11% spending boost as a result, showing the significant demand from fans." The hospitality sector as a whole benefited from the early hours kickoff, with footfalls on high streets across the UK increasing by nearly 150% between midnight and 6 a.m. compared to the same period last year, according to MRI software. Regional cities saw the biggest benefits, with footfall increasing by 188.3%, representing a near tripling of footfall towards pubs, bars, and other local venues compared with last year. Footfall in market towns increased by 175.5% and in historic towns by 159.9%, while Greater London saw footfall increase by 114.2%. The match, which saw Jude Bellingham and Harry Kane combine to earn England a memorable 3-2 win at the Azteca Stadium, Mexico City, has set the stage for more businesses to benefit from future matches in the tournament.
Thames Valley Police have confirmed the arrest of a man following a report of a burglary from Kidlington Football Club. Thames Valley Police arrested a 38-year-old man on suspicion of a burglary on Thursday, July the 2nd. The incident occurred at around 9 p.m. on Sunday, June the 7th. Those with information are encouraged to contact Thames Valley Police on 101 or quoting the online reference 4326-028-5567. Kidlington Football Club is on Yarton Road in Kidlington. The Kidlington Football Club has endured multiple burglaries and vandals in the past. The Kidlington Football Youth Club had their clubhouse broken into in 2016. Police have said that the supply of drugs causes significant harm across Oxfordshire after a man was jailed just weeks after arriving in the UK in a boat. Adrian Zika, of no fixed abode, was caught drug dealing in Kidlington on June the 2nd this year. The 25-year-old pleaded guilty to possession with intent to supply a Class A and a Class B drug, namely cocaine and cannabis. He was sentenced at Oxford Crown Court on June 30th. Investigating Officer PC Ryan Dollery said, "The supply of illegal drugs causes significant harm across Oxfordshire, including in our rural communities, where criminal networks often seek to exploit vulnerable people and operate with less visibility. Thanks to proactive policing, officers were able to stop Zika, recover these drugs, and prevent them from being supplied within our communities. We are committed to tackling all forms of criminality that affect rural areas and will continue to take robust action against those who seek to profit from the supply of illegal drugs." The court heard he was in the UK illegally and had fled Albania when he was 15 years old. He was promised work in the UK by those who brought him into the country, which led to him being found with drugs. Alexandra Boschel, prosecuting, told the court Zika was found with a total of 21 wraps of cocaine and 10 wraps of cannabis. He was handed a 16-month prison sentence. Orders were also made for the forfeiture and deprivation of the drugs and the car he was stopped in.
An arrest has been made after a pensioner was allegedly cheated out of money by a fake courier who is reported to have taken her bank card. The elderly woman, who lives in an undisclosed area of Oxfordshire, was contacted by someone claiming to be a bank official last September who said he was investigating fraudulent activity on her bank card and that he needed to send a courier to collect it. The card was collected by a courier and then used fraudulently to pay for multiple items. So-called courier fraud, which occurs when a fraudster telephones victims plausibly pretending to be a bank, police officer, or other official, and may even confirm basic, easily obtainable information with the victim, like their name and address. A report in this case was made to the Thames Valley Police, and the investigation was subsequently handed over to the Leicestershire Police when a potential suspect in the area was identified. Leicestershire police officers arrested a 26-year-old man suspected to be involved in a courier fraud offence after warrants were executed at two addresses in East Leicester. The man has been released on police bail pending further inquiries. Investigating Officer P.C. Clifford said, "This type of offence is of great concern to us. Suspects are targeting elderly or vulnerable people. They sound genuine and gain the trust of the victims. The police or banks would not contact people in this way. If you get a call like this, hang up. Don't be pressured into agreeing to anything." She advised anyone who receives a call of this nature to discuss it with a family member or trusted friend, even if the caller says not to, and to contact the bank on a known official number. She added that your bank cards are yours, and neither banks nor the police would ask for them to be handed over for safekeeping. PC Clifford said, "We are asking people to remain vigilant. If you have elderly neighbors or relatives who don't access our website or social media sites, please advise them of these incidents. Telephone companies can assist with call blocking technologies to help restrict these types of calls. We would recommend that people talk this through with their vulnerable or elderly family and friends to help prevent this activity. At times, the fraudsters use local taxi firms to collect bank cards or transport potential victims to their banks. We would ask taxi companies to be mindful of this, and if they have any suspicions, to contact the police immediately."
Local partners are continuing to work together to address concerns around antisocial behaviour in an Oxfordshire town. Demi, from Vale of Whitehorse District Council's Community Safety Team, joined PCSO Jennifer Holt of Thames Valley Police, South Oxon and Vale, during a visit to Abingdon recently. They visited places in Abingdon where concerns about antisocial behaviour have been reported, including Abbey Meadows, West St Helens Street and the Charter. Together, they looked at what improvements and actions could help address residents' concerns, also speaking with staff and members of the public. Antisocial behaviour, ranging from noise nuisance to vandalism, can significantly affect residents' sense of safety. A former Formula One mechanic has revisited the world of motorsport after a long and storied career. Alan Challis, a resident at Sanctuary Care's Wantage Residential and Nursing Home, visited the Williams F1 Heritage Centre in Grove. It followed outreach by the care home team after they uncovered his extensive motorsport background. Mr. Challis began his career in the late 1950s, working with top teams including BRM, Lotus and Williams. He rose to become chief mechanic in one of Williams's most successful periods in Formula One. Mr. Challis was reunited with the last car he worked on before retiring, the FW13/13B from 1990. He shared stories from his time in racing, recalling a career that began as a BRM apprentice in the era of front-engined Formula One cars. By age 21, he was travelling internationally with race teams, including in Graham Hill's 1962 World Championship winning season. Mr. Challis became one of the sport's most respected mechanics, later serving as car build manager at Williams. He was also known for mentoring and inspiring many colleagues throughout his career. He now lives at the Wantage Residential and Nursing Home, a not-for-profit sanctuary care facility. Young people are being celebrated for overcoming barriers to employment. 22 people, aged 16 to 24, were recognised at a ceremony hosted by Oxfordshire County Council's Oxfordshire Employment Service, which supports residents with learning and physical disabilities, as well as long-term health conditions. Councillor Rebecca Fletcher, Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care at Oxfordshire County Council, said, "This was a great event and incredibly uplifting to see these young people taking their first steps into work. Everyone deserves the opportunity to find fulfilling, meaningful employment, and this event celebrates the determination and achievements of those who are making that journey." The scheme supports individuals through supported internships and the government-funded Connect to Work programme, helping them to build confidence, gain practical experience, and take steps towards paid employment and greater independence. Each participant is supported by a dedicated support worker. The award ceremony took place at County Hall and was attended by family and friends. Certificates were presented by Councillor Ted Fenton, Chair of Oxfordshire County Council, Councillor Fletcher, and Karen Fuller, Director of Adult Social Care. Among the awards, the Connect to Work Achievement in Employment Award was given to a young person now thriving in a customer service role, demonstrating that with the right workplace adjustments, he could succeed. The supported intern of the year earned praise for their dedication and positive attitude and excellent customer feedback, including glowing reviews on TripAdvisor. Will Gardner, team manager for Oxfordshire Employment, said, "It's fantastic to see the progress individuals have made through our supported internships and Connect to Work programmes. This event recognises not just outcomes, but personal journeys. The confidence gained, the skills developed, and the ambition shown by everyone involved. We're proud to support people as they take their next steps into employment." Dr. Martin Reeves, Chief Executive of Oxfordshire County Council, told attendees that employment opportunities should be accessible to everyone and that inclusive employment remains an untapped resource benefiting both businesses and residents. two employers were also recognised for their commitment to inclusive hiring. The Pub Club, which supports young people in West Oxfordshire aged over 18, offers paid employment opportunities in hospitality with a pathway to permanent roles. GXO Logistics in Banbury received an Inclusive Leader Award for its long-standing support of accessible employment opportunities and for acting as an ambassador for supported internships and Connect to Work. A primary school has been recognised for its efforts to improve children's dental health and well-being. John Blandy Primary School in Abingdon has earned the Smile Silver Accreditation for Oral Health, which celebrates its work to promote good oral hygiene and healthy habits among pupils. The award reflects a school-wide approach to raising awareness of dental care, including lessons on toothbrushing, healthy eating, and the importance of regular dental checkups. Suzanne Elliott, head teacher at John Blandy Primary School, said, "We are incredibly proud to have achieved the Smile Silver Accreditation for Oral Health. This award reflects the enthusiasm of our pupils, the dedication of our staff, and the support of our families. Developing healthy habits from an early age is an important part of children's well-being, and we are pleased that our whole school approach to oral health has been recognised." A primary school has launched a new shed reading space to inspire a lifelong love of books. Wantage Primary School celebrated the Reading Shed project with a visit from children's author Camilla Reed, who officially opened the shed. Located between the Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2 playgrounds, the Reading Shed will give children access to books throughout the school day. Andy Brown, head teacher, said, "The Reading Shed is about opening up opportunities for every child to enjoy books whenever inspiration strikes. We want reading to be at the heart of school life and are hugely grateful to our PTA for helping bring this vision to life. The shed will also be available to families who can borrow books to read at home." During the launch, Miss Reed read her new book, I Am Ready for School, to children preparing to start reception in September. A bespoke gin created with the help of care home residents has won top honours at an international competition. Golden Hour London Dry Gin, developed in collaboration between Bicester-based Skywave and the Barclay Care Group, earned a Master Medal at the Global Gin Masters. It was one of just five winners in the contemporary category. Andrew Parsons, master distiller at Skywave, said, "We are thrilled with the success of Golden Hour in the Gin Masters. It was an absolute pleasure to work with the residents of Barclay Care Group. Their enthusiasm and insights were invaluable in creating Golden Hour. We're very proud to have crafted a gin that truly resonates with their palates, brings them such enjoyment, and which has been recognised on the global stage." The gin was created after Barclay Care Group residents, who voted gin and tonic as their favourite drink, visited the Bicester distillery to help guide its development. One resident called the resulting gin exceptional. Golden Hour is described as a London dry with a floral, aromatic and characterful expression, perfect in a gin and tonic. The name comes from a weekly tradition at Fernhill House, a care group home. Residents gather every Thursday evening to share a drink in Golden Hour, a ritual now embraced group-wide. Double Michelin-starred chef Raymond Blanc joined culinary students from Activate Learning's group of colleges for a special ceremony. The event at the Centre of Oxford College and University Centre brought together students, parents, staff and guests from Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons in Great Milton. Winners were named from Professional Culinary Arts Level 1 and Professional Culinary Arts Level 2 programmes, alongside a Campus Star Award winner. Mr. Blanc, who lives in North Oxford, also presented a special award in memory of Talvin Garg, a former apprentice at the college who trained at his world-famous restaurant Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons in Great Milton. In 2024, Talvin achieved a distinction on the Commis Chef Apprenticeship at City of Oxford College and University Centre. Less than a year later, he was promoted to the role of Demi-Chef de Partie at Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons, the youngest chef to achieve this at the restaurant and cookery school. He died last August, aged just 19. Activate Learning will run the award and accompanying culinary competition every year across its colleges, celebrating promising culinary students. Awards were given across Professional Culinary Arts Levels 1 and 2, along with the Campus Star Award and the Special Award in Talvin's memory. Gary Headland, Chief Executive of Activate Learning, said, "Tonight's celebration is a celebration of the remarkable achievements of our extraordinary learners who are just starting out on their journey and already achieving great things. We are incredibly grateful to Raymond Blanc OBE and the team at Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons, a Belmond hotel, for being here tonight to inspire our next generation of chefs. The hospitality and catering sector is central to a vibrant economy, and we are incredibly proud of the work we do across our group of colleges to help meet the needs of our local communities by supporting young people to access fulfilling careers they are passionate about." Mr. Blanc said, "As a chef who has worked 50 years in the profession, who was totally self-taught and never had a master to show him the way, it was a very touching, enjoyable moment to see these young people rewarded for all their efforts, for their work, commitment, passion, and thirst for knowledge. It was also another special moment to celebrate Talvin, who was in our kitchen at Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons, a Belmond hotel, and was one of my highly respected young chefs. He illuminated the kitchen. He had that gentleness and was constantly curious. We loved him."
A village's traditional carnival has been hailed a classic after a bumper turnout to the sunny celebration. Ensham Carnival was held for the 78th time on Saturday, July 4th, and included a parade, stalls, a craft fair, arena acts, fun fair, and the famous shirt race. Reputedly the second oldest pram race in the country, after Bampton, the shirt race sees groups in fancy dress traversing 7 furlongs in a non-motorized vehicle. One was in the style of a fire engine, which the Ensham Fire Station crew called amazing. One of the village firefighters said, "Another great year at Ensham Carnival. Thank you to all who came to see us when we finally made it to the field. Sorry we were unable to attend the parade due to being called out to multiple incidents which delayed entry to the carnival, so thank you for your patience." The Ensham Morris dancers performed, raising £150 for charity. "It was a classic Ensham Carnival," said a member of the acclaimed Morris dancing side before adding, "Thanks to everyone, including all of those who generously donated to our charity collection of £150.
People born during a specific week in July are being invited to claim a birthday surprise. Cotswolds Designer Outlet is marking its first anniversary by inviting anyone born between July 13th and July 19th of any year to visit the centre and collect a free birthday gift. Adrian Field, centre manager at Cotswolds Designer Outlet, said, "We wanted to mark our first birthday in a way that felt fun, memorable, and most importantly, involved the community that has supported us throughout our first year. We know there must be hundreds of people across the region who share our birthday week, so we're inviting them to come and celebrate with us." Whether you're turning 1 or 100, we'd love to welcome you and help make your birthday even more special. Visitors are encouraged to bring ID, such as a passport, driving license, or birth certificate, to claim their gift. The birthday celebrations include lots of free activities, entertainment, and exclusive anniversary offers from big-name brands and local favourites. While supplies last, all birthday twins will receive a free birthday gift to mark the occasion. From Memory Corner, 1986. We're used to seeing post offices closing and being rehoused in convenience stores. But what's this? A post office in a pigsty? The 500 villagers at Over Norton, near Chipping Norton, were left high and dry without a post office for 4 years after the postmistress retired. So farmer Ian Pearman and his wife, Rebecca, stepped forward and opened one at their farm in the centre of the village opposite the old post office. It was housed in a stone barn at Furze Farm, which was last used as a pigsty and was previously occupied by cows and other animals. Mr. Pearman told the Oxford Mail in 1986, "When the cows moved out, the pigs moved in. And when the pigs moved out, the post office moved in. These old buildings are no good for modern farming because you can't get the machines in, but it was ideal for a post office. There was no shop, no pub, no post office in Over Norton, so it seemed a good idea to open here." The post office also included a general store where villagers could buy food and a range of other household goods. After the previous post office and shop closed, a villager provided a postal service at her home one morning a week. Then mother of three, Mrs. Pearman, took over, opening Over Norton post office and stores on Monday to Friday mornings and sometimes in the afternoons. She said, "We felt there was a need for one in the village. People felt a bit restricted only being able to buy stamps and collect their pensions one morning a week. The alternative was to travel to Chipping Norton, but elderly villagers found the walk difficult and buses were irregular. The pigs were moved to a new sty elsewhere in the village."
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, we now have a new landline number you can call. The number is 01865 377 635. That is 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, Oxtalk's listener coordinator. You can also telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on Alexa devices through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Oxtalk using Alexa. To listen to Oxtalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.